Thanks for watching Heavens Declare. I'm Jim Burr, and we're doing a program today for the kids. And I've learned that adults like it too, because we got so many beautiful pictures coming up. And you know, if you ever have a chance to look through a telescope, the moon is just incredible. I could spend weeks looking at the moon. You can go to the library and get a book and learn all of the craters. And in fact, I like to work with two telescopes. I like to, when I have friends over, give them one telescope and I'll get another one, and we'll look at the moon, and I'll walk them around the moon. Look at these mountain ranges here, the Apennines mountain ranges. They're 18,000 feet tall, you know, on the moon. And if you follow the Apennines, for instance, makes an arc. If you follow that down, all of a sudden you'll see a crater that's a darker crater, and that's Plato, and that's about 60 miles across. And if you continue on down, you have a walled plain. You have where a plane comes in, a lava apparently has come in, and we have sort of a big arc. And then if you follow it around here, you have Copernicus. And if you go on up above that, we have the Sea of Nectaris. We have Theophilus, Crilius, and this is a newer crater because you see it's pushed over into the other ones. And we have craters like Messier 1 and 2, and they're on the very edge of the moon. These are really fun to watch. They're small. But apparently an impact came in at a steep angle and shot matter out for hundreds of miles. You see the streamers. And so just even looking at the moon is breathtaking. And of course Saturn is, people who watch Saturn for the first time, it's fun for them to, you know, it's fun to see that for the first time and hear their oohs and their ahs, and actually, you know, they're actually seeing the rings around Saturn, and the rings around, the moons around Jupiter. You have, even with a pair of good binoculars, you can see moons around Jupiter and the rings of Saturn. They'll be pretty small with binoculars, but the problem is that these cheap telescopes that are sold in stores are a disaster. And if you're interested in getting a telescope, I would definitely recommend taking a look at what we call a Dobsonian telescope. Dobsonian scopes are quite reasonable, and they're very solid. They don't shake all over the universe. The stuff that's sold at some of these department stores is so wiggly and so shaky that you would be so discouraged. And in fact, I had a friend that called me up, or I was headed to California, and he said, I've got a telescope, you know, and I'd never seen a thing through it. And it, you know, it was like hundreds and hundreds of dollars he spent for it. And the problem was it wasn't focusing, and because some of these, you get a long range of focus, and unless you're close, what you've got to do is you have to look at a TV tower or a hill or something way down the road, get it in focus. Then when you look at the stars, you'll be able to find them. But if you have that focus off an inch or so, you won't see a thing. You won't see a thing through it because it'll be so blurry, you won't even see there's anything there. And just be real careful buying department store telescopes, because most of them are so flimsy. But the word to look for is Dobsonian. And the smallest Dobsonians are like 3-4 inches in diameter, and then they go on up to 16 inch and so forth. But I mean, you can get some of those for under a couple hundred dollars, and they're really a wonderful instrument. They really are. For the money, a Dobsonian would be the best scope. They're very rigid, very stable. They don't shake all over the place, and most of them you'll actually be able to see moons around Jupiter. You'll see our moon, and you'll see the rings around Saturn and other things. Depending on if you're in the middle of a city, you're not going to see much. But even in the city, you will see like Jupiter and Saturn and the moon. But as far as seeing, you know, a lot of beautiful stars, you need to get out in the country away from the city lights. And so today we've got a lot of stuff to show everyone, but the young kids particularly. And I live in the mountains of Colorado, and we're up at high altitude, 7,000 foot, and we have a lot of life that comes to our feeders. We have birds that come. Just recently we saw a couple of bobcats coming out down the mountain looking for, I suppose, rabbits would be their favorite food. and hummingbirds in the summertime. It's fantastic living in the mountains. The hummingbirds, you can actually get them to sit on your finger while they drink from the feeder. And you know, it's wonderful living in the country. And we were in Russia, and we were in these apartments that went up, 20, 30, 20 stories, and people living in little cubicles. And when we were there and we showed pictures of the animals in Russia, people said, oh, this would be heaven. This would be heaven to be able to have animals like I'm going to show you a couple of animals coming up here. Well, you know, the Bible says that heaven is a country. Heaven is a country. And I have some pictures of people in Hong Kong, and you can't believe, you know, it must be 100-foot stories in little cubicles, people living in little cubicles, never get to see the beautiful beauties of God's creation, never get to see the mountains and the trees and the flowers and all of the animals that He has created. And that's not really the way God designed this earth. You see, it says heaven will be a country. And I'm going to share some things with you about tree houses, because tree houses would be absolutely fantastic living in the mountains, where you would have birds coming to your feeder. And I've been in some of those tree houses. Tree houses are becoming very popular. And you know something? I'm going to show you something. In heaven, you can have a tree house. Because what I'm going to show you, God, you know, Ellen White is a lady that lived over 100 years ago. And God showed her many things. And one of the things she showed her would qualify for tree houses. And we're going to show you that. But first, I'd like to share with you an image of where I live in the mountains, and where we have this deer and elk that come to our house, come to our feeder. And there's a deer that will come and actually eat out of my hand. This mother deer will actually come when I call her a few times. When I call her, she likes apples. And I take an apple and a knife and go out there and cut slices. And she just loves apples, and she loves those little carrots. And we've had some others, actually, we've had three deer that we have been able to feed. And we have a couple hundred elk that are in the valley. And now this is looking out of our front door of our house. And you see an elk there. It was actually more elk. There was about five elk out there keeping our lawn mowed. And these elk are quite tame, too. I told my wife, I think if I worked with them, I could probably get them eating out of my hand. And with the deer, if you throw the apple out, you know, they get fairly close to you, and I don't have dogs that chase them away. And they will actually get curious if you throw an apple close to them, and they'll come up and eat it, and then you bring it closer and closer and closer. Finally, you hold it out. Well, that morning that you saw that elk, there's actually five mowing the lawn there. And I went out and talked to them. They just kept eating, and they'd look at me and didn't run away. And then I opened the door to go to work. The garage door is very noisy. I thought, well, that'll scare them. They didn't scare them. I drove the car out, closed the door. That didn't scare them. Drove away. They're all there. So that's kind of the way it's going to be in heaven. We're going to, you know, the Bible says the animals are afraid of us now, the fear because of the sin of Adam, the fear of you and the dread of you. But in heaven, I think you're going to get to work with these animals, and the deer and the elk, and I think it's just going to be a fantastic place. But I want to share with you some pictures of tree houses now. Kids, how would you like a tree house like this? Would that be incredible, having a tree house like that? Wouldn't that be cool? That's kind of a fantasy. It looks like a fantasy design. But we've got some other tree houses that are not. This is going to be a fantastic tree house. Look at that. How would you like to live in something like that? Wouldn't that be cool? The ultimate Swiss Family Robinson tree house. And here's another tree house that is very modern looking. Would that be cool living in that? We've got one more coming up here, and this is a very modern one. And do you know that God gave Ellen White a vision of something like this in 2 of SG 52, Spiritual Gifts? She says, I saw the most beautiful houses that had the appearance of silver. Does that look like a silver appearing house? I saw the most beautiful houses that had the appearance of silver, supported by four pillars set with pearls, which were the most glorious to behold, which were the inhabitants of the saints. Pillars, and I have probably 30 pictures of tree houses, and they're all supported on pillars. Almost all of them are on pillars. And here she saw these trees. And the Bible says that heaven is a country. Imagine a tree house in the country, what it would be like to have, you know, the beauties of the sunrise and the sunset and the fresh air and the mountain, you know, the birds singing and all that. I'm going like, wow, heaven is an incredible place, isn't it? And she says that human language is inadequate to describe the reward of the righteous. It will be known only to those who behold it. No finite mind can comprehend the glory of the paradise to come. Folks, if you want a treehouse in heaven, the Bible says we're going to build houses and inhabit them. In fact, I think you may have three houses in heaven, because the Bible says, Jesus says, in my Father's house are many mansions. Jesus said, I go to prepare a place for you. And the Bible says you're going to build houses and inhabit them. So it could be that you have three houses in heaven. But a treehouse, like you saw on the screen, wouldn't that just be incredible? Our next image is of our earth. And here is our earth in space. What holds the earth up? What holds the earth up? You know, what if you live in Australia and you're on the bottom of the earth? You know, remember the kids singing the song, what holds me up when the world's upside down? Well, it's so big and so small, actually, compared to the sun and other things, it's very, very small. But, you know, the Bible has a lot to say about the Bible, about the earth. And Jesus, you know, created the earth, and by him were all things made, and there was nothing made by him. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made. And they used to think that the earth was flat. It looks flat, doesn't it, when you walk outside, until we got a spacecraft. And you get in a spacecraft, all of a sudden you see the earth is round. And the Bible said that correctly, that God sits over the circle of the earth. They used to think it was flat. They used to think, some religions taught that the earth was supported on the back of turtles. And somebody said, well, what's a turtle stand on? Well, another turtle. They said it was turtles all the way down, you know. Some religions taught that it was on the back of elephants. Used to believe that it was supported on the back of Charles Atlas. And God said he hangs the earth on nothing. And here it is in space. Wow, how is it held on nothing? Well, it's gravity, isn't it, that holds the earth as it travels around the sun. And earth is just the perfect place for us to live. It is, if it was any closer to the sun, wouldn't that be too much closer? You would not be comfortable because of the heat. If it was further away, it would be just too cool to have life and to grow food and so forth. So the earth is just, God placed it so perfectly. And the spinning of the earth is so critical. It just turns the right amount. If it, you know, it turns every 24 hours. If it turned like every 12 hours, you would just scorch to death the temperature. Just imagine if the sun came out and stayed in the sky, you know, for a long time, you'd be overheated. And then when it got dark, it would get so cold that the temperature drops very fast. Up in the mountains where I live, it really drops when the sun goes down, because it escapes, you know, the heat escapes from the earth. And so there's so many things about the earth that are just perfectly designed. It shows, it didn't just happen. It shows that we have a creator that had us in mind and did just a perfect job of creating our earth. And we could go take a look at the next graphic, which we have Saturn and Jupiter, Uranus, Neptune. Now you see the little earth down there. We could put a million earths would fit inside of our sun. Over about 1,300 would fit inside Jupiter. We see Saturn with those beautiful rings. Those rings extend out about 170,000 miles. If you put the rings on the edge of our earth, it'd almost reach out to the moon. And then the two blue ones are Uranus and Neptune. You wouldn't want to live on any of these. These are all perfectly placed for us. You would not survive on Venus. You would die within minutes. On Mars, you couldn't last very long without all kinds of special apparatus to make you comfortable and keep you warm, and you wouldn't be able to grow any food. And Mercury would be hot on one side and cold on the other side. And, you know, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, we don't even know if you have a hard surface, if you could put a chair or if you could walk on it, because they're gas giants. We just have gas. We can't see below the clouds, so we don't know what, you know, we don't know what is there. And on our next graphic, we have a galaxy. Now, our sun is part of 100 billion stars, more stars than you can count. And this is kind of what a galaxy looks like. It's just all these stars. And our sun is just a star. It's just an average star, nothing special about our sun. And it's located on the edge in the Orion Arm. It's about two-thirds of the way out from the center of the galaxy in what's known as the Orion Arm of the Milky Way galaxy. And that's a perfect place for us to be, too. You know, so we see that we see it's designed for us. Let's see, we have coming up a graphic that might be a little fun exercise. You can impress your friends here if you like, because if you see the list here, you could write your name so that you could be found any place in the universe, anybody could find you. And so you'd start first with your name, put your name on the first line. You might want to write this down. The second line, you put your street address. Then you put your city, then you put your zip code, and whatever state or country you're in. And then you have the country, in this case it would be, I'm in Illinois, where in the country it would be United States. The continent would be North America. The planet would be Earth. And our star would be the sun. And our location in the galaxy would be the Orion Arm of the Milky Way galaxy. And the galaxy would be the Milky Way. And which galaxy cluster? Our galaxy is part of the Virgo cluster that we call the local cluster. And so that would be something fun that you might enjoy, writing your address so anybody, any place in the universe could find you. We have the next graphic coming up is what's known as the Jewel Box. The Jewel Box is a star cluster of hundreds of stars. It's just a beautiful, beautiful sight, and they have named it the Jewel Box. And when I think of that, you know, the Bible talks about his jewels, and in Malachi 3:17, he's going to make up his jewels. And as I go to speak in churches, I often do the children's story, and we use this for the children's story, the pictures that are coming up now. But we show the jewel box and we sing the little song, and I'd like to try to sing it to you. And many of you probably have heard it and would join in with me. And it goes something like this. when he cometh to make up his jewels, all his jewels, precious jewels, his loved and his own. Like the stars of the morning, his bright crown adorning, they shall shine in their beauty, bright gems for his crown. He will gather the gems for his kingdom, all the pure ones, all the bright ones, his loved and his own. Then the chorus, like the stars of the morning, his bright crown adorning, they shall shine in their beauty, bright gems for his crown. And the third verse, little children, who love their Redeemer, are the jewels, precious jewels, his loved and his own. Like the stars of the morning, his bright crown adorning, they shall shine in their beauty, bright gems for his crown. Yes, you can be Jesus' jewels. And he, you know, probably can't wait to show you the beautiful things of the heavens. I think we're going to get to travel with Jesus. I bet he just can't wait to take you, to show you the wonderful things he has created. And as we move on our program, the next graphic we have you ever looked up in the sky and you saw a cloud, something that maybe looks like a bunny rabbit? And we often see clouds that look like, you know, different things. Here is a coming up is a picture of a fish, and this would be, you could say, well, that looks like a red snapper fish in the sunset, a beautiful sight to see, but it looks like a fish. And then we have another one that looks like a feather, and it really does, doesn't it, look like a feather. And then we have one that looks like a hummingbird. And lo and behold, when we look through a telescope, we see things that look like these little creatures. In the next case, you'll see a butterfly, and we have a butterfly wing nebula. I put together 275 of these pictures for the Michigan conference, who wanted to teach their adventurers astronomy. Isn't that a beautiful picture of the butterfly wing nebula? Just absolutely breathtaking. That is actually an exploding star, and we have, you know, we have hundreds of those in the sky. And as I mentioned before, what we believe and what seems to be true is we have these stars that are so big, like Orion, like the Betelgeuse, and Orion is a billion miles in diameter. And these biggest stars, like Orion and Canis Majoris and some of these, they think will, like a balloon, you blow up a balloon, it gets too big, it pops, and it becomes very bright for a few weeks, a few months maybe. And so gas goes out in opposite directions. Now, the butterfly nebula, what we believe is that there is a very intense magnetic field in the center here that causes it to go not just like a balloon, get bigger, or, you know, a circle. It actually, the magnetic field in the center of that star would cause it to shoot out in opposite directions symmetrically. In fact, if you could go take a look, if your kids are on the internet, look up the Van Allen belts, because our Earth has a magnetic field. That magnetic field of our Earth protects us. It protects us from radiation from the sun. And if you look at the Van Allen belts, the magnetic field around our Earth makes the lobes symmetrical, just like the butterfly wing nebula and some of the other exploding stars that we have that go out symmetrically in opposite directions. So that's why when this one exploded, it didn't just go like a big, you know, circle, but went out in opposite directions. So we see that from time to time. There's quite a number of them that are that way. The butterfly nebula, the butterfly wing nebula is another one that does it. In our next graphic, we have some little mice. And somebody used that and called the mice galaxies. So here you see two galaxies in the next image, and they have tails. That one has a long tail on it. And so they have been named the mice galaxy. Now, a galaxy is outside of our Milky Way. A galaxy is something way, way out in space. We're talking 30 million years, where it would take light 30 million years to get here from that, because it's so, so far away. We can't even comprehend what that would mean. It's just really, really far away. And the next image we have is actually of a Chevy Nova. And well, there's just a regular Chevy Nova, but the next one is a supernova. It's a hot rod nova. And if you're familiar with anything in space, you know that's a term we use. So the next image that we have is a supernova in our galaxy. And a supernova would be one of those stars that explodes, and that I mentioned before. We believe these stars, the big ones, Canis Majoris, 1.8 billion miles in diameter. Arcturus is a really big star. Antares is a really big star. We believe they burn up their fuel, and they get bigger and bigger and bigger like a balloon. They get so big they can't contain themselves, and we get this big explosion. So that would be a supernova. And people have asked, what is this? Where is, you know, if a star exploded, what does that have to do with heaven and God and a creator? There's a couple scriptures that might help us understand that. We don't know when that explodes. Is that part of the curse? Because when Adam and Eve sinned, we had curses, didn't we? But if you look at Hebrews 1 and 1 verse 11, it says, "Of old he laid the foundations of the earth, and the heavens are the works of his hands. They will perish." The heavens are going to perish, but God will endure. And so It says, yea, they shall wax old like a garment, as a vesture shalt thou change them. So the Bible talks about the heavens perishing. It talks about, like as a vesture shalt thou change them. This is a vesture. In King James, a jacket would be like a vesture. It casts off its outer shell, and there's always a star remaining in the center. Well, we need to move along, and the next image we have is the tadpole. And we have a galaxy that kind of looks like a tadpole, and it's called the Tadpole Galaxy. And that's kind of a cool picture. Next image we have is of a sombrero. We have a galaxy which has been named the Sombrero Galaxy, which is, we believe, the biggest, probably the biggest galaxy we have out there. They think this may have up to 800 billion stars. And there's kind of a dark lane through the center. Sombrero Galaxy has a designation M104. I love to look at that. It's in the spring of the year. It's in the area called the Realm of the Galaxies. The next picture is a horse head. And then we have a horse head in Orion. And here's the horse head picture in Orion. This is located right on the bottom belt star of Orion, right below. If you look at the belt of Orion, he has his shoulders, he has three stars in his belt. The horse head is right there at the very bottom of the belt star. The next image is an ant, but we have what is called the ant nebula. Now, a nebula means just a cloud. It's the ant cloud, and there are four basic types of nebula. The nebula that are bright because they're hot, and some because they have hot stars in them. Then we have the dark ones, like the horsehead was dark nebula. And we have these exploding stars, which we call planetary nebula. The next image is of an Eskimo. And we have a star that looks like an Eskimo. And this would be, the next image shows the Eskimo nebula from an amateur telescope. This is what you'd see if you had a decent telescope. You see a little Eskimo there. He's got a cold nose. You can see his lips, and he's got a parka on. But the Hubble did a much better job of photographing the Eskimo. So that's really an incredible image that the Hubble gives us from the Eskimo Nebula. And we have hundreds of these in our Milky Way galaxy. That's about all the pictures we can show you for today, because time of the show is just about over. But I want to thank you for watching Heavens Declare. And we have a whole series of programs you may want to order, you know. But we long for the day when Jesus is coming to take us to see these beautiful things He has created. Thank you for watching Heavens Declare. We'll see you next time.